Thank you very much. You can be seated. And as you're seated, would you open your Bibles, please, to Psalm 139. Psalm 139. You know, this is one of the most popular psalms in the book of Psalms, second only perhaps to the 23rd Psalm. And so as we come to this psalm today, the reason that it is so popular and the reason that it speaks so profoundly to us is the tremendous view of God that it gives us and the understanding of God's interaction with us as human beings. Now, before we're going to understand what this psalm means and how rich it is, we need to understand, first of all, how it was birthed in the heart of David. This is a psalm that was written by David. David is in trouble once again. I love reading and I love studying the life of David because the guy was constantly in trouble. He was a great warrior. He was a great worshiper, but David was always in trouble. And one thing about David is he knew what to do with his troubles. And so here he is up against some fierce enemies who hate him and who hate God. And we're not sure who they are or what they were doing, but David is surrounded by evil and by evil people. And we know that by reading, for instance, in verses 19 and 20. So I actually just jump ahead there to verses 19 and 20, where David says, "Lord, if only you would slay the wicked, O God, away from me, you bloodthirsty men. They speak of you with evil intent. Your adversaries misuse your name." Now again, we're not sure exactly what's going on with David, but he is surrounded by evil. And you know, as I read these verses, it sounds a lot like what we go through when we're tempted. When we feel evil pressing in around us, and we see it all around us on display, and we even sense it in our own hearts. And there are times when we feel evil pressing in on us, and I know that's what David must have felt. And our tendency is that when these kinds of things happen, we become, as it were, practical atheists. We begin to think and act as though God doesn't even exist. This evil becomes so pervasive around us and so overwhelming to us, and we may even think that it is totally irresistible. We begin to think and act like practical atheists, that God isn't around, that he doesn't exist, and he isn't there to help us through times like that. But I'm going to tell you, faith is just the opposite of that. Because you see, faith allows us to see God more real than any evil that is around us. Our faith lets us see God bigger than any evil that surrounds us. It lets us see God more powerful than any evil that surrounds us. And so you can see here where David is. And it's against this dark backdrop that all these brilliant things about God show up so clearly. A few years ago, Nan and I toured the Tower of London where Great Britain's crown jewels are on display. And there in this beautiful facility, actually was a torture chamber at one time, but now they have displayed there the royal jewels. These are crowns and scepters and orbs and swords and robes that are all worn by the king or the queen at coronation ceremonies or other state functions. And if you tour the Tower of London to see the crown jewels, you stand on a conveyor belt, if you will, similar to what you see in airports. It's a moving walkway. You stand on this moving walkway, and it takes you through the entire exhibit and display of the crown jewels. And as you go along, you move from display case to display case to display case, and you see these priceless jewels. And in this setting, the lights are dimmed way, way low, so that the brilliance of these jewels just absolutely mesmerizes you as you slide by them on this moving walkway. Well, what I want to happen for us today here in Psalm 139 is I want it to become a kind of moving walkway that will take us through one quality of God after another, and that we will just be absolutely overwhelmed by the brilliance of God and His remarkable qualities. You see, there are things about God that you or I will never see when we're going through good times and happy times. There are things about God that we will never see until we get into the darkest moments that you can ever imagine. And it's against the backdrop of that darkness that the brilliant qualities of God begin to shine forth. So David is singing. The Psalms are faith songs, and faith sings in the presence and in the light of Almighty God. What is it that gives us assurance in times when we are fighting the battles, when darkness presses in all around us? Well, the first thing is, we know that God knows more than you can ever comprehend. God knows more than you can ever comprehend. And again, I want us just to stand still and let the scriptures here in Psalm 139 take us past these brilliant qualities of God. These next verses are full of God's knowing activity. For instance, look at verse 1. O Lord, you have searched me and you know me. So David is saying, Lord, you have probed and examined everything there is to know about me, and based upon that, you have intimate knowledge of who I am. You know me that well. Verse 2, you know when I sit and when I rise. You perceive, and there's a different, yet another knowing word. You perceive my thoughts from afar. Lord, this intimate knowledge that you have of me tracks every second of every day that I live. You understand my thoughts from a distance. It's like, God, it's like you're in my head. Verse 3, you discern. And there's yet another knowing word. You discern my going out and my lying down. You are familiar with all my ways. David is saying, Lord, you search out and you measure the journey that I take in life. You know when I lie down at the end of that journey. You know my ways better than my closest friend knows me. By the way, you put the sitting and the standing there in verse 2. And you put the going out and the lying down in verse 3 together. And what you have there is a picture of every activity of life. God knows it all. He understands and he knows more than you or I could ever comprehend. He knows about it. You know, a few weeks ago, there was this big uproar when people who had iPhones discovered that Apple had been secretly tracking your movements, that they, for the last year or so, have been able to chronicle every place you have been. You could even get an app now and be reminded of everywhere you've been for the last year. And you know, Americans don't like this kind of invasion of privacy, do we? And yet, do you understand today that God has this very knowledge of you from the very day you're born? He knows when you sit down and when you stand up. He knows when you go out on a trip, and he knows when you come home. He has this intimate knowledge. He knows more than you could ever comprehend. He knows all your actions of every day. He knows when you get up in the morning. He knows what you have for breakfast. He knows the route that you take to work. He sees the details on your desk. He's in on the lunch appointment that you have. He knows when you go home into the day. He knows what you watch when you sit down to watch television. He knows when you go to bed. He knows all of the actions of every day. But on top of that, he not only knows the actions, but he knows the motivations and the imaginations that are going on behind all those actions. He says, "You know my thoughts from a distance." God, you know it all. Even more so, God knows our reactions. Look at verse 4. "Before a word is on my tongue, you know it completely." Oh Lord, before we form a word on our lips, the Lord knows what we're about to say. Verse 5, "You hem me in behind and before. You have laid your hand on me." Now, Lord, you have this 360-degree knowledge of me. Your knowledge surrounds me. It's everywhere I turn. When it says you have laid your hand on me, it means you have cupped your hand over me, sort of like we do when we're trapping a little bug under our hands. That's the picture that David is painting here, God. You have this knowledge of me. Verse 6, "Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too lofty for me to attain." God knows more than you will ever be able to comprehend. And the fact that God knows everything about us can be either incredibly intimidating or it can be incredibly comforting and reassuring, depending on how you look at it. But David says this knowledge is wonderful. We cannot comprehend it. It's what Paul said in Romans 11:33. "Oh, the depths and the riches of the wisdom and the knowledge of God. How unsearchable his judgments, his paths are beyond tracing out." And the writer of Hebrews says in Hebrews 4:13, "Nothing in all creation is hidden from God's sight. Everything is uncovered and laid bare before the eyes of him to whom we must give an account." So God knows more than you and I will ever comprehend. Now, how does this knowledge sustain us in our faith every day? Well, I'm going to tell you what it does. It sustains me because I know that the things that I can't tell anyone else, God knows. The things that I feel like I'm facing alone, that no one else knows, God knows. And that's good, and it may be bad. The things that I'm trying to hide, God knows. The things that other people will never know, God knows. Now here's the next thing we see about God. Not only does God know more than you will ever comprehend, but also God is closer than you realize. He's closer than you realize. You wake up to the reality that everything you go through in life, every day, every experience, God is near. He's in on every conversation that you have. He's with you in every meeting that you sit in on. He's with you as you're driving down the road. He's with you as you're sitting in your classroom. God is closer than you realize. Now, I know this is something we know intellectually, that God is everywhere. But friend, do you really seize on that fact that every minute of every day, God is right there, closer than you ever realize? God isn't missing in action. The Lord is present and active in every place. Look at verse 7. "Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence?" Maybe David is just so overwhelmed with this knowledge of God that he thinks about trying to run from God. And that's a futile thing. You can't do it. You can never run to a place where God isn't. You can never escape his presence. When he says, "Where can I flee from your presence?" it literally means, "Where can I flee from your face?" Your face. Have you ever been to an art gallery and you see a painting there with a person that's looking at you, and no matter where you go, you can't escape the face of that person in the painting? That's the way it is with God. David says, "God, where can I go where your presence is not real and active?" And the answer is nowhere. Look at verse 8. "If I go up to the heavens, you're there. If I make my bed in the depths," literally Sheol, the abiding place of the dead, "you are there." So David is saying, "Lord, no matter how high I go, you're there. And no matter how low I go, you're there." You see, this isn't just something that is spatial. It means that God, no matter how high I may soar in my life, when I'm on top of my game, when everything is going great, no matter how high I go, God, you are there. And Lord, no matter where or how far low I may go, you're there also. God is closer than you realize. Look at verse 9. "If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast." So maybe, just maybe, you can hitch a ride with the sun when it rises in the east, and you ride it as it traverses across the sky to the west. That sun will never take you somewhere that isn't in the presence of God. I think it's interesting that in verse 5, David talked about the knowledge of God being like the hand of God cupping him, like we cup a little bug when we catch it on the sidewalk. But here now he understands that this hand of God, notice it leads him. "Even there your hand will guide me, your right hand will hold me fast." This knowledge of God and this presence of God is for his interaction and his involvement in our lives. Look at verse 11. "If I say, surely the darkness will hide me, and the light will become night around me." Let me just pause there and say, when he says this darkness will hide me, the word literally means there, this darkness will crush me and bruise me. And there are times, like David went through, when the darkness is so intense that it seems like it's going to crush us and bruise us. And yet, he goes on to say in verse 12, "Even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day. The darkness is as light to you." Do you understand that there is no place so dark in life that the light of God cannot penetrate? There's no place, no depression so dark that the light of God cannot penetrate. There's no circumstance that is so dark that the light of God cannot penetrate. Now, how does this knowledge of God sustain me in my faith? It tells me that when I'm surrounded by evil and the darkness of life is around, I'm never alone. God knows more than you can ever realize, and he's closer than you will realize. He's present. There's never a moment when you're out of his presence, when you're alone. Now, there's one more thing we need to see about God. He knows more than you can ever comprehend. He's closer than you realize. And next, God is more involved in your life than you can imagine. He's more involved in your life than you can imagine. And let me just show you just how involved God is in your life. Whether you know it or not, whether you act on it or not, whether you believe it or not, this is how involved he is. He knew you before you were born, and he created and arranged your body within your mother's womb. That's a wonderful thing for us to contemplate today on this Mother's Day. Look at verse 13. You created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. By the way, that word created is an interesting word. It means to create something for one's own possession. You see, God didn't just create you and then disown you or throw you away. God created you for Himself. He created you for His purposes. And friends, that's where our meaning in life comes from. The fact that God created us for His own possession. And when it says that God created our inmost being, you see it there in verse 13? It means that God not only created our bodies, but He created that invisible part of us, our emotional makeup, our moral character. God made you uniquely with the body that you have and with the personality that you have. What an amazing thought. How God is involved in your life even before you were born. And this knowledge of God causes David to just erupt in praise and worship. Look at verse 14. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. God is more involved in your life than you could ever imagine. Worship and celebrate and praise Him for that. Verse 14, or verse 15. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. I have in my hands here the ultrasound photographs that were made of our two grandkids when they were still in their mom's womb. And if you've ever seen one of these photographs, you know, the doctors can make out all kinds of features and tell you all kinds of things about it. To be honest with you, I'd just say, huh? That's a child? Looked like a peanut to me. And those photographs can be rather nebulous and hard to make out the features. But you see, God sees perfectly everything that is being made in the mother's womb. He sees it clearly because He's involved. Verse 16 says, your eyes saw my unformed body. That word literally means the embryo. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. God is more involved in your life than you realize. He scheduled every day of your life before you were born and records every day of your life in His book. God marvelously plans out our lives, and you put all of this together and it tells you that every embryo is a person that God has created for His own purposes, and God has ordained and set forth the path of that person's life. And this is the basis for our conviction that there is sanctity of life from the womb to the tomb. That those babies born, forming in a mother's womb are the perfect creation of God, and we are to protect it. That is the reason we believe that abortion is wrong, and we fight for the right to life. And so, God is more involved. I'm not the master of my own destiny. I'm not the master of anyone else's destiny. My life is in the hands of God. So God is more involved in your life than you ever imagined. He created you for Himself. He arranged the schedule of your life. And then, just get this, He thinks about you all the time. Look at verses 17 and 18. How precious to me are your thoughts, O God. How vast is the sum of them. Were I to count them, they would outnumber the grains of sand. When I awake, I am still with you. Now, you and I may look over the events of our lives, and it can fill us with regrets and with questions. But do you see how God is presiding over it all? Now, does that mean that God is responsible for our sins and our mistakes? No, that's not the case. But it does mean that God wasn't surprised by them. And it means that God works through those mistakes and through those choices that we make to bring about His perfect plans for our life. Now, how does this knowledge now sustain me in my faith? This knowledge that God is more involved than I imagine. I love this picture of God. One of the most basic things about walking with God is learning to think about God all day long, to keep Him central in our thoughts throughout the day. But does it occur to you that God is thinking about you all day long? Now, I realize that we have this image of God that He is so far and so distant that He sort of made us and then He just left us alone like an absent father. You understand, David says here, God, you think about me more than I could ever realize. I couldn't count the thoughts that you have for me. Friends, if that doesn't give you meaning in life, I don't know what will. To know that God thinks about you all the time. Now, what do I do with this knowledge of God? That He knows more than I could comprehend, that He is closer than I realize, that He's more involved in my life than I will ever know. Well, David prays in response to this. He prays. For the first time now, we see David asking God for something. Jump down verse 23 and 24. He prays this prayer. He makes this request of God. He says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts." Let me just pause there and say, we begin back in verse 1 where David makes this statement about God. God, you have searched me and you know me. That's a statement. He comes back to verse 23, and he puts it in the form of a request. God, you have searched me, and you know me, and now, Lord, I want to know what you know about me. I want to know what you think about me. See if there's any offensive way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. So here's our response to this. First, be humble. Be humble. If this doesn't do anything else, if this knowledge of God doesn't do anything else, it ought to humble you today. Lord, I want to know what you know about me. You are God and I am not. And Lord, I humble myself before you now. Humble me. Next, be honest. Be humble. And be honest. Get personal with God. Lord, search me. Dig deep. Penetrate into my heart. You know, we like to grade our own papers, don't we? As we're thinking about our lives and how well we're doing in life, we like to grade our own papers. And generally, when we grade our papers, we generally grade it based upon external things. But what does David say? He says, Lord, now search me and know my heart. My heart. You know, there are really three different yous sitting where you're sitting right now. There is the you that you think you are. There is the you that others think you are. And there is the you that God knows you are. And the challenge in life is to live in that reality. Being the me that God knows me to be. Be humble. Be honest. But be hopeful. You see, God doesn't have all this knowledge of us so He can use it against us. He doesn't have this knowledge of us so he can just squash us and punish us. That's the way we think. Somebody that knows something about us, something bad about us, they're going to use it to hurt us. But that's not what we see here. We can be hopeful because David says, "And Lord, with all of this knowledge, would you lead me in the way everlasting?" David is confident that God knows him, knows more than he could ever comprehend, is closer than he would ever, ever realize, and that more involved than he would ever imagine. And in light of that, lead me, Lord, in the way I should go, in the way everlasting.